Hey everyone, welcome to Respect Our Authority, Wisecrack's South Park podcast. My name is Jared. I'm joined here by Wisecrack content lead Alec.
Howdy ho.
And a Wisecrack writer and director, Mike Lux.
Hey everyone.
And Ryan, our editor, who's usually with us on these podcasts, is actually not with us today. He's currently at Fantastic Fest in Austin, Texas. So he is greatly missed, but hopefully he's having fun. So last night was the premiere of Season 21, Episode 3, entitled Holiday Special. Kind of a funny title for, I mean, I get why they called it that, but definitely strange to hear a title called Holiday Special in September. But I want to hear what you guys thought, first impressions. Alec, what did you think?
It definitely had some good moments. I'm going to go for like a C.
Ooh, harsh.
I'm sorry. What about you, Lux?
I mean, I'd say like a BB plus. I thought it had some of the stronger joke writing of the season and like at least like a clear idea of what it was trying to do, which is nice. So yeah, I know. I'd say BB plus. I thought it was pretty well executed.
So some of my favorite like moments, I love Randy's eye and then him shitting on New York. That T-shirt is just fucking great.
Yeah. Randy had some like absolutely incredible jokes. I'm just trying to get them to change British Columbia to just British.
Yeah. And also, amazing. As someone who lives in New York, yeehaw, I'm from New York. I drive around a big circle that celebrates a guy who murdered Native Americans. Shooey.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Some really good jokes in this episode.
Yeah, I liked the episode quite a bit. And I think part of the reason why I like the episode is that this is kind of a commentary. I don't know, like, it's just very refreshing living in Hollywood, living in LA, where there pretty much is just like one ideological opinion. And just seeing that, oh my God, there are people here making content in LA that are still making things that are subversive. Thank God. And I felt that kind of the criticisms in this episode were particularly not only hilarious, but definitely resonated with me. So we can talk about that a little bit. But first, I want to give you guys a quick recap of what the episode is about. So in this episode, Cartman and the kids are pissed that they canceled Columbus Day because Randy has gone on a crusade against Columbus Day. And he contacted the what is his name?
Mr. Galtman.
Mr. Galtman, who is the calendar, head of the calendar or something like that. A completely superfluous profession. And so Kyle tells Stan that he has to put his dad in check because the kids want that day off of school. And, you know, I like this because, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't give a crap about the political ramifications of any day as long as it was that we got a day off of school. That's all that mattered. And so meanwhile, Randy is on a mission to shame as many people as he can in order to make himself feel morally elevated by taking down Christopher Columbus. So he tries to take down a Columbus statue. In a really funny scene, he calls everybody in Columbus, Ohio and calls them a racist piece of shit for choosing to live in a city named for ethnic cleansing. Then he poops on the Columbus statue in New York City. And then so Stan and the kids have to find a way to get him to stop so they can have their day off. So Kenny accidentally stumbles upon a series of Instagram photos that show Randy in a Christopher Columbus Halloween costume. So when this happens, Randy realizes that he is done for, that they're going to come for him. He needs some way to make him immune from criticism. So in comes DNA and Me, the service that lets you feel like a victim. So then Randy decides to take the test, but before taking the test, he decides to make out with a Native American so that he can cheat the test and get some Native American in him. Meanwhile, the kids are trying to blackmail Mr. Gopnik, or Galtman, whatever his name is, into basically discrediting Randy and getting him to watch on VHS an image of Randy shooing a Native American off his land while dressed as Christopher Columbus. Ultimately, they have to retake the test. He realizes that he's just the normalest white British guy possible. Oh, and then, of course, Randy realizes that although he may not be Native American, he may not have a trendy sense of victimhood, but he is part Neanderthal. And if you go back far enough, you know, I guess everyone's a victim. So he claims that victim status, and it enables Mr. Galtman not to criticize him. And then in the resolution, which I thought was a little bit weird, they decide that they're going to make the holiday about saying what we all really are thinking so we can move on. And that's basically it. So there's a lot of interesting things to tackle here. First, I want to hear what you guys thought was kind of the most interesting commentary of the episode, and then we'll go from there.
Well, I'll go first. Why not? Because I already made a sound. Yeah, so I thought this episode had some really smart things to say about how people construct their own social position, how new technology lets them do that, stuff like 23andMe and whatever. The whole idea of creating your ancestry to sort of tell the story of who you are and letting that justify or de-justify certain criticisms, like you were saying. I also think it's interesting. One thing that stood out to me a lot was at the end when he gets his "you're a general generic white dude" thing, it's less than 50% Northern European, which I think is like a kind of subtle hint at the idea that like white identity as a concept is vastly constructed, because he's almost...
Well, it's that almost Mediterranean and then right. Some sort of Asian.
And Southwest Asian, which is, you know...
Yeah, what is Southwest Asia? I only hear of Southeast Asia, which is, you know, China.
Southwest Asia would be like Afghanistan, Middle East.
Okay.
That part of the world. So I thought that was like a really interesting thing to add. Honestly, one of my biggest takeaways in the episode is that I learned that Randy's full name is Randolph, not Randall.
Oh, when did they reveal that?
There's a shot of his diploma on the wall, and it's for Randolph Marsh. And I've been calling him Randall to myself for years.
So one of the things that I thought was interesting is that we've talked a little bit before, like the previous episodes are not so much about the issues, but how people react to the issues and then sometimes like overreact, underreact, whatever. And in the same case, like, I don't know if you would agree, but the episode is not about, you know, whether or not Columbus was in fact, you know, like a genocidal, you know, maniac, but that like Randy's sort of zealousness about it, which is sort of the brunt of the joke. So, you know, so I think like Stan kind of plays like the role of like maybe a more normal person of like, listen, like, it's not that you're wrong, you're just an asshole kind of mentality, where, you know, you're calling someone up from Columbus, Ohio and calling them a racist piece of shit. So in addition to this idea of like this overzealousness, this is another South Park episode where people who are not white are largely absent. And I think intentionally, the obvious exemption being the Native American that Randy makes out with for the DNA test. And I think it's because like one of the criticisms that I can definitely see is that for some people, it's, you know, about their social status. It's about their sort of social capital in complaining about these things and not the actual people that they intend to help, right? So Randy literally kicks off a Native American off of his lawn, says, "Get off my land," while dressed as Columbus.
Well, and he's just playing with his emotions mercilessly and right. is not treating him, you know, with any respect or like a human being. So, yeah, I mean, his concern for the Native American plight is completely inauthentic.
Well, right. He's exploiting a Native American person specifically for the purposes of being able to claim that he is in fact a Native American person himself. It's like a multi-layered degree of exploitation.
So there's one part of the episode that I mostly agree with what you said, in that, you know, the episode kind of takes the fact that Columbus is was genocidal as a given. However, there is that one line from, is it Butters or maybe it's Jimmy, where Jimmy says, "Does anybody actually know what Columbus did?" What did you guys think about that?
Well, Kyle starts Googling it and he has this look of horror on his face. And I thought the joke was going to be like, "Oh my God, guys, like, look at, like, you know, sold Native into sex slavery to his people," when he's like, they saved him the first time he came, and then he saw they were wearing gold jewelry and came back and then like enslaved them all and whatever. But instead, it's just like, oh, Randy's dad is dressed as Columbus in all these photos.
Right. I mean, the way I took it is that, I mean, I don't think that they were saying that, like, oh, you know, this happened so many hundreds of years ago, you know, nobody knows what the fuck happened. Like, I don't think that's what they were saying, but I do think they were saying that, you know, it was just once again a comment on a lot of activism, is that people don't even know about the thing that they're getting outraged about. It's like, it's including Randy. You know, Randy has no, you know, he doesn't even know what the word indigenous means.
Yeah.
And, you know, yet he's super up in arms. And, you know, you see this all the time with people who are at protests. And then when they're asked what they're protesting, they don't even know. Which, by the way, to me is actually the scariest thing about our modern political reality.
Yeah, that's stressful.
It is very stressful. And I think, you know, last episode I talked about, I think, like, Cartman plays the role of like what happens when a sociopath gets a hold of, you know, either a social movement or like, you know, a business scheme or whatever. And I think like Randy, and I'm kind of loosely thinking back to his involvement in a lot of things, is sort of just like the bandwagoner. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I almost say sometimes he's the bandwagoner for sure, But almost, if you're going to say Cartman's what happens when a sociopath gets his hold on social issues, Randy's what happens when a dumb guy gets a hold of social
issues.
Right, no, issues.
That's what I mean by like a bandwagoner, right? So like, I do think there's a certain element of people are up in arms about things and don't understand. There's, you know, like there's literally no nuance. And actually, I love one of the parts I like best about the episode. And give me 1 second to find it.
Actually, I have it right in front of me if you want me to read it. This is when Randy is calling everyone in Columbus, Ohio, and shaming them for living in a racist state, or excuse me, a racist city. And Stan says, "All right, Dad, we get your point, but don't you think you're overdoing it?" Randy says, "You have to do it in today's society, son. You can't be nuanced and subtle anymore, Stan, or else critics go, oh, what was the point of that?" So, I actually wanted to ask you guys about that, because this makes sense up until the point of "or else critics go, oh, what was the point of that?" I mean, that seems to be another South Park meta joke about, I'm imagining they're talking about critics of the show. Or did you guys take that a different way?
Oh, no. I thought that was 100% a response to the response to the first episode of the season.
Oh, really?
Because that was the gist of a lot of criticism. I know between us, we talked about it in those terms. I also read things that talked about it in those terms. Like, it's just not clear what they're trying to do here. Or, like, what's the point of this episode? Or, I'm just not sure the message got across the way they wanted it to. And then they pretty explicitly were sort of like, all right, you don't think that's subtle enough? We'll do this episode where it's everything is extremely obvious and there's very little subtext happening. Here you go. Like, I hope you enjoy it.
Well, I disagree that there's not a lot of subtext, but I mean, at the end of the day, I do think that this is a better episode than the first episode. And I don't know. Part of me also thinks that South Park might be patting itself on the back a little bit too much to say that the first episode was nuanced and subtle. I would just say that it's messy, but I guess we can save that for when we do our makeup episode of the first episode of the season.
Well, I have experience with that, but I thought that felt like, if not a direct response to that specific thing, at least that response, that critical reaction had a part to play in constructing that line, I thought, for sure.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
But yeah, but that can also apply to a ton of other things as well, not just South Park itself, but with social movements in general these days. I mean, you see, to talk about like the trendingest one, like this football stuff, it started out as not necessarily nuanced, but fairly subtle and with very specific things going on. And now it's sort of morphed into this general protest about the idea of like unity, I guess. I don't know. I haven't been following it super closely, but that's sort of a great example, right, of something starting with an idea and it not being big enough or overdone enough. So people just either insert their own stuff into it or choose to ignore it or whatever. And now that it is huge for various reasons, we're kind of seeing this is now people are paying a lot more attention to it in like terms of what they're actually trying to talk about, although that's becoming different. But the point is, I think that's a spot on sort of idea that they have out there, that when you leave room for nuance, it leaves room for sort of cracks in the ideology. And in the world we live in, people who don't agree with the thing or just want to seem smart or contrarian will exploit those cracks sort of always. And I think that's a problem for politics and social life, but also a problem for people like Randy, who need to communicate an idea and just can only do it in like the broadest possible terms.
Yeah. And I think it really speaks to, and granted, like maybe I'm just being like a self-centered millennial here, but I think it has a lot to do with social media, although maybe it's always been like this, that there, like, especially with Twitter and things like it, there's no room for nuance. And in fact, it will, because it's so much more exciting to say like XYZ is like pure evil, fuck them, you know, I hate everything. And that will get people really riled up and on your side. But like, if you were to say, like, well, actually they did a lot of shitty things, but like, I don't know, maybe we can look at this thing they did as like, you know, like they're a complicated person. People sort of just like are like willing to snooze. Like, and this actually comes up like a lot in the like statue debate. Like Columbus might be like an like extreme example. You know, in New York City, for instance, there was like, oh, like, are you going to pull down a statue of Ulysses S. Grant? Because, you know, one of the things he did was like he expelled the Jews from a town. And, you know, we can say like in retrospect, that's bad. But, you know, instead of being like, well, like, what did he do that was good? And we can certainly condemn this and take note of that. People just want to go to one side or the other, like, fuck Ulysses S. Grant, or, you know, preserve our history sort of stuff.
Yeah, so I think there's an element of this in this idea of, you know, one thing that we see a lot today that I find kind of annoying is how we will kind of take our contemporary morality or, you know, whatever this, you know, seemingly uniform idea of morality, and then just use that to judge the past where there's no concern for any kind of moral relativity. So, you know, I think Randy points at this when he says, so when the kids confront him with the idea that he used to dress up as Christopher Columbus for Halloween and apparently also his wedding, he says, look, I was younger. We were all younger. It was another time. You have to understand, it was 2013. Everyone was stoked on Columbus back then.
Everyone had the classic Columbus staff and orb.
I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about, and maybe you guys are going to disagree with this, and this might be a bit of a tangent, but I've been thinking a lot about kind of social media in the terms of like it being very panoptic.
Yeah.
And let me just break that down a little bit for our viewers. So the panopticon is just, to oversimplify, it's this idea that when you feel like you're being watched at all times, you internalize discipline. So in a sense, with social media, you know, everything that we say, every tweet that we put out, every Facebook status that we put out is written in ink, and there are always eyes watching. And so I feel like, you know, because we're always being watched, there is, you know, we're like rag dolls. This kind of new morality just imposes itself on us. And like, you know, it's the thing I don't like is when people get so high and mighty about like, you know, oh, well, you know, now we're so evolved now. And, you know, I would never do something like that people did 100 years ago, which I think is bullshit, because I think that a lot of this is just based on the fact that we're all scared shitless. You know, we've literally been just fear-mongered into acting a certain way in this new idea of morality because we're being watched all the time and we have to constantly censor ourselves. And so, you know, if we say, like, what is 2017 morality versus 2013 morality, it is so different just because of the ways of communication and stuff like that. And people just want to forget about that. And they want to pass judgment based on current morality and say, you know, that there's a lack of awareness in terms of, you know, how, you know, the outside forces that compel us to, you know, feel certain ways or to have certain values that neither you or I or anybody would have had, you know, even 5 years ago, never mind 20 years ago or 100 years ago.
Like, there's something even more kind of insidious, I guess is a decent word for it, going on, right? Where in 2017, and I think in many ways a good thing, there's sort of been a larger discussion about lots of ideas of morals and social justice and stuff like that. And that's really great. But that wasn't happening in 2013, but all of your Instagram posts and your tweets from 2013 are still around.
So you can
dig back to a time where it was okay to do a certain, where it was socially acceptable to do or say a certain thing, where certain imagery we hadn't sort of had the cultural conversation about yet or whatever that you were replicating then, and people will say, how could you have done this? How could you have said this thing or done this thing? And it's sort of like, well, at that time, this, I understand now, I can look back on it and be like, that was a mistake, I shouldn't have done that. But at that time, socially speaking, it was fully acceptable. And people will just hold you accountable for it as though you just did it yesterday.
So, I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate here, but do you think, and of course this is going to vary depending on what the situation is, but do you think that you say, oh, I really shouldn't have done that because you're scared shitless of the consequences, or because, you know, and I think that once again, we internalize this fear to the point where, you know, we're convinced that we wouldn't do these things for moral reasons. But I mean, part of me very cynically thinks that people are just scared shitless into a point of control.
Well, like, I like to think that I'm like growing and becoming better at being a person, but I think you're right that there's a certain point at which, and that's sort of what the idea of the panopticon was in the first place, right? Where that becomes indistinguishable, where right. It's, you can't ever really fully know if these choices you're making are because you really as a person have these principles and you become firmly grounded and you're ready to fight the good fight or whatever, or if because that's been foisted upon you by social dynamics and you'll never, no one, you'll know, you'll never really know.
Right. So I want to bring it back to this idea of fear. Like, once again, are you motivated to have these opinions due to, once again, moral growth? Or is it that just you're scared shitless into submission? And whether or not, you know, on a larger social context, I mean, you know, that's a much more complicated question that we don't have to get into right now. However, I do think in the episode, there are some pretty big hints at the fact that, you know, Randy is just scared out of his mind. You know, he's always saying, they're going to come for us, Sharon. Do you know what they're going to do to us if they find out? They're going to come for you, too.
Well, I think it's like he built his social capital on calling people out. So then, like, the most dangerous thing for a person who builds their social capital that way is to get called out.
No, and then this might be a bit of a tangent, but so, you know, you brought up something, Lux, about how, you know, if you said something in 2012 that was largely acceptable, but it's still there, and now in 2016 it's no longer acceptable. There's an episode of Black Mirror, if you guys listening watch that, great. If not, I apologize for this break in topic, but the episode with the grain, what is that one called, Alec?
It's called The Entire History of You.
So in this episode of Black Mirror, The Entire History of You, there's a very small line in which somebody asks another person, like, do you support the idea of going back into people's memories and judging parents based on bad parenting, you know, based on today's standards? So, for example, if all of a sudden today we decided that spanking is horrible and you should be punished for spanking your child, and then, you know, we go into somebody's memories and see that 20 years ago your mother spanked you, should we, you know, should that person be penalized by that? And I think that we do see similar things in social media today. And I think that the episode kind of touches on that with, once again, in 2013, dressing up like Christopher Columbus probably wasn't a very big deal. Now, granted, the episode does make it seem that Randy is a little bit too stoked on Christopher Columbus, which is kind of a different thing. But if,
I mean, that's just a Randy joke.
Right. But if we were to believe that, once again, in 2013 or even earlier, you know, there wasn't an outrage culture built around, you know, Christopher Columbus, then yeah, I mean, it was a relatively inane thing. It's another thing about this culture and like political correctness in general is that intent doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter if Randy was, you know, just dressed up like Christopher Columbus because maybe that's the only costume he had, or maybe he just really liked that time of history, or maybe he just, you know, has Italian blood or something like that. I don't know. You know, like
just wants to make use of his staff and orb.
Right. So, yeah, I just wanted, but I think that was a very interesting moral question. And I think that we're seeing a less extreme version of that in today's society, especially with a lot of kind of online witch hunting going on, which perhaps Randy is scared that he is going to become a victim of. But granted, you know, he kind of perhaps deserves it because, you know, he was being a huge hypocrite. Yeah. But this brings me to another line I want to bring up. And this goes more to what we're talking about is when Randy says, just because Columbus isn't cool anymore doesn't mean I need to be the fucking scapegoat.
Yeah, I do. I like that a lot. I mean, it's debatable whether or not that's true in the context of the episode, because he kind of puts himself in that position very like aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a part of that joke that is sort of like Randy doesn't understand what he's done or what he's doing. And that's sort of the classic Randy situation. That's Randy's character for a decade now. But I do think there's also something to that in terms of you find a historical or ideological issue that you have and create a totem person who stands in for that. And it's not, I hate the social relationships and class historical moments that led us to ABC. It's, I hate Derek from accounting because he wears a bunch of clothes that represent this thing that I hate. Derek is my go-to name for anyone I don't know their name. But I think that there's a real, that's a fairly real thing that he's somewhat worried about, where you sort of become the stand in for a social issue that people are mad about. I think that that's pretty real. I think that Randy in this case deserves it.
Sure.
Maybe more than other people historically have, but sometimes those people deserve it too. But I do think you're right to point out that that's a dynamic that plays out on a fairly regular basis. I mean, the inverse of the NFL thing is during the initial like Colin Kaepernick protest stuff, like he became the focal point for a lot of the like just people who are mad about protests in general.
Right.
Just got mad at Colin Kaepernick. And like that's a very different situation, but this, that sort of idea of how we totemize a single person to represent like a wide range of ideas.
Well, do you think that there's also a implicit criticism that in call-out culture, or once again, the cultures that are very aggressively pushing for some sort of progress, require a scapegoat in order to either A, make themselves feel morally elevated or something like that?
I was just going to say, like, I wouldn't say it's inherent to like all progressive things or even but like there is a population of people who are very active on social media. And the thing that always I'm always thinking about is like the loudest people are often the maybe not necessarily, again, like not necessarily the most nuanced or well thought out, or even the most right. They're literally just the loudest. And I think there's a correlation between like lack of nuance and loudness. So who are like, you know, doing these things looking for Randy to call them out. So do they need a specific, like, I think these people need a scapegoat, this sort of imaginary community I've created. For instance, like when I was a teenager playing video games, I said terrible shit and I apologize about that. But like, you know, there's a difference between someone who wanted to dig that up and like be like, Alec, you fucking asshole, you're the worst. And someone being like, oh, hey, like 5 years ago, like you sexually assaulted someone. That's not cool. And that was never cool, you know?
So do you think that, first of all, one of the things that South Park constantly comments on that I love is this idea of, you know, Americans being completely narcissistic. And I just love at the beginning of DNA and Me, it's all about, would you like to know the story of you? Yes, you. And then it just says you like four other times because South Park is always calling out. Usually, like anytime there's any kind of benevolent mission or anything like that, it's usually South Park just reveals it to be just like cleverly veiled narcissism. And I think there's a lot of that to what Randy is doing in this episode. But I also want to talk about, so it's not only in community building, but I also think there's an element of it as like victimhood as fashion or victimhood as social elevation. You know, once again, like everybody wants to be immune from criticism, right? That would be great. And I think that, you know, once again, when Randy finds himself in a position in which he can be exposed and possibly harmed, whether in a physical way or in a social way, his immediate thing is, oh my God, I need to associate myself with a, you know, with Native Americans who are victims, and you can't criticize a victim. So what do you guys think about that? This whole idea of victimhood as fashion, victimhood as like almost sainthood, or like, you know, once again, social elevation. Nobody's going to criticize a victim and everybody just loves being invincible.
Well, I think there's two levels to that in this episode. The first is, so this happens a lot in sort of the Tumblr sphere, kind of progressive politics universe of the internet, where someone will have a progressive take on a thing. And then someone else will be like, yeah, but see, the way you're thinking about it is colonialist. And someone else will be like, well, your framing of it as colonialist actually reveals this like racist assumption and da 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 da. And so there's always a sort of urge to sort of one up the sort of epistemic failures of different people. And so the easiest way around that is to say, well, you don't know my experience. I'm a Native American person, or I'm a whatever person, or I'm the specific kind of person that we're talking about. And I think Randy's thing is that he knows that what he's, or on a certain level, right, because he's the fear you're talking about, he knows that there's flaws to the way he's approaching this issue, that he's not doing it perfectly. He knows that for two reasons. One is that he's Randy, and even he knows he's dumb. And also that it's very sort of clumsy. He just shit on a statue.
Yeah, so it seems like, I mean, to put it in a very crude way, it seems like what you're saying is like in the Tumblr sphere, validity is granted to those who win in a victim dick measuring contest.
I mean, there is definitely a certain degree of like oppression Olympics that happens in this kind right. of thing. I don't think that's the, right. the universal measure, but that's a,
no,
a
not
big...
the universal. I'm just saying what the episode is making fun of.
Yeah, it definitely is. The episode's definitely like leaning on this like oppression Olympics sort of thing where someone's like, yeah, exactly, where someone's like, well, I think it's pretty, you know, I don't like this idea because I am oppressed by this. And someone else is like, oh, you're oppressed by that? Well, check this out. And that, yeah, there is a certain, this game of who has it worse. And I think Randy wants to win within the framework that he's existing.
But doesn't that just kind of nullify any legitimate discourse if all we can really do is back up our ideas by, once again, like, either ancestral victimhood or personal victimhood? Like, then, once again, the actual substance of our arguments become arbitrary.
I mean, that's why a lot of Tumblrs are bad.
Yeah, so on the ancestral question, I think in the worst versions of the Tumblr sphere, it's literally like a biological determinism. Like, oh, well, I'm a quarter Cherokee, therefore, A, I'm entitled to speak on behalf of all Cherokees, and B, like, you know, this is the sort of trump card.
I actually think you said something super duper interesting that I want to jump on really quick. If you have to 23andMe or DNAandMe, whatever, the biological roots of theoretical oppression, then like you probably aren't actually dealing with it, right? Like that's not, if you right, have to exactly. like double check the science to find out whether or not you're oppressed, like you're probably all right. And I think that that's sort of what's happening to Randy, right? Like what's happening to Randy is that he's just lying to everyone because he's scared of getting yelled at, because admittedly getting yelled at is the worst. I hate it so much. But I think there's something really interesting that you get at there with this idea of this 23andMe kind of thing, where it's like, if you're, I mean, obviously everyone's the victim of complicated social relations. There's all kinds of things going on. I'm not going to minimize or maximize certain forms of oppression because that's just a crazy thing to do. But there's a certain point at which you can tell when bad shit's happening to you. Like, right. you'll notice it. You don't need to
right.
do a mouth swab and send it to a lab to find out if people are shitty to you. You just, people are shitty to you and you remember because it's shitty.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'm restating what you already said, Alec, but you mentioned biological determinism, but the way I thought about determinism in this episode is when, once again, Randy discovers that he's a Neanderthal. And there's this idea, it's like, yeah, you know, it's acceptable to go back in time to, you know, X amount of years to say, all right, well, you know, my people were oppressed and therefore I'm still experiencing, you know, victimhood from that event. But, you know, where do we draw the line? You know, I think that most people are meant to believe that the idea that Randy calls himself a victim because literally thousands of years ago, you know, his people were sexually assaulted. Like, we're not supposed to allow him to claim any kind of, you know, immunity to criticism because, you know, something happened thousands of years ago, right? Like, there's a line to be drawn. I guess, like, the commentary is that, you know, whether it's 20 years ago, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, in terms of, you know, I'm not responsible for my actions or I'm a victim of something that happened 100 years ago, 20 years ago, 1,000 years ago, there has to be a line in which we take personal responsibility and not just allow social events in the past to determine, you know, who we are and, you know, what challenges we have and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I think it gets back to this nuanced joke, right? Like, this is a very sort of nuanced, complicated question. And it also speaks to, like, Lux's question. Like, if you have to do an ancestry test to figure this out, like, that's, like, a pretty easy line to draw. Like, the Neanderthals are obviously a very easy case because, like, all the Neanderthals are dead. And so far as anyone can tell, there's no, like, discernible discrimination against people with 2% Neanderthal things. You know, that being said, like, sometimes I think about, like, you know, like Roman conquest, like in the first millennia. Is that the right time frame?
Millennium is the singular millennium.
The first millennium. Like, you know, like they conquered the Gauls and did all these things. This is a question, like probably a nuanced one. Is there a reverberation of that throughout history? Like, you know, people who are descended from the conquered peoples of Rome, like, is there something going on there? Like, I honestly don't know if any of our...
I mean, if you're a determinist, the answer is yes. You know, I mean, once again, as Lux pointed out, everyone's a victim of something. You know, we don't get to choose our destiny. We're always a product of forces preceding us.
Right. So the determinist thing would be like, well, you know, my ancestors were conquered by the Romans, therefore I'm oppressed. That's obviously the stupid argument, right? But I think, you know, like, I don't know, like, has a historian gone through and done the work? Is like, actually people who are descended from them have like blah, 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 blah. I mean, like, you know, a clear example of going way back is like the way the Jews have been fucked over for, you know, thousands of years. You know, so that's an example. Then obviously you have things like civil rights. That's only, 70 years ago. And then, you know, the Civil War, which was only, you know, not even 150 years ago.
Yeah, 140.
Yeah. So that's like very recent. And there is a line, and I don't know where exactly it is, but it's an interesting debate. But I think all nuance is always lost when you're tweeting something.
I mean, if you want an example of exactly what we're talking about, this idea that like, in the world of social media universe, big ideas trend and detrend. And like, if you want an example, like the current one that is fairly resonant, at least for me, is like, if you look on most websites in America, you'll probably find an article about fat shaming or anti-Semitism or race issues in America. And you won't find an article about like a genocide that's like currently happening in Myanmar.
That's because the genocide in Myanmar needs better PR,
right? Like, no one cares. But that's a real thing that's happening.
Yeah. I mean, and I say that very cynically. Like, I mean, that's not a good thing. I'm just once again commenting on the fact that it's all about how these issues are marketed. It's not about the actual severity of them, which is really sad. So last thing I want to ask is, what do you guys think about the conclusion of this episode where they decide to maintain the holiday but make it about saying what we really think so we can move on and then basically just insulting each other?
I don't know, like, so one of the responses to Columbus Day is to actually make like an Indigenous Peoples Day, which I thought was like clever. It's like, we're going to call it, that's what he calls it, but he means indignant because he doesn't understand what that word means. But then I was like, oh, would it be a good idea to have a day where everyone, quote, is dedicated to, quote, ripping on each other and tearing each other down? Will that just be like our purge day of emotions?
I just thought of something. It also could be that because he misunderstands the idea of indigenous in the first place, he misunderstands the idea of what Indigenous People's Day would be, right? Like, instead of Randy understanding that, like, this should be a day where we think about the struggles of indigenous peoples, of the ways in which they've been dicked over by all sorts of incredibly terrible things, from genocide to nuclear tests to whatever. Instead of that, he's like, let's just get all this shittiness out of our system. And I just think maybe it's another way in which he just misses the point of exactly how you reconcile with the past in a way that might be helpful.
Right. I think so. It's like a mix of what you and Alec are saying. He thinks that he thinks that in order to be progressive, he needs to make Indigenous Day, but he thinks Indigenous means indignant. So he thinks, oh, well, we're going to do the progressive thing and make Indignant Day.
Yeah, exactly. And in doing so, miss the point of actually like reconciling with history in any meaningful way.
Right. All right. Well, let's move into the mailbag. Alec, I know you've got some questions picked out.
Yeah, and before I get into it, anyone who wants to send us a question, you can hit us up at southpark@wisecrack.co. That's southpark@wisecrack.co. So the first question comes from Andrew M. He says, I want your guys' opinion on during the episode, North Korea literally shot a missile over Tweek's house and nobody notices, and the general public is solely focused on what Trump Garrison is tweeting. Having just recently separated from the military, I've noticed that when something real like shooting a missile happens, no one cares and is just focused on what Trump is tweeting. What do you guys think? Thank you for the great content you all make and keep it up.
I definitely think that there's an element to that there, that all anyone ever cares about is what Trump says. And actually more to Lux's point about how this season so far has more been about the way that people react to important events than the actual important events themselves. And I think that Trump's tweets is a perfect example of, you know, it's not so much the missile that matters, but what Trump does in response that matters and is ultimately going to escalate the scenario.
Yeah, I mean, also, I think some of it, one of my favorite things South Park does is once in a while it takes advantage. It does it more rarely than you'd think, but it takes advantage of that fact that it's a cartoon in terms of just having things happen that sort of don't make any sense and using that to create a goof. And I think this is just another also a really good example of that. Like, that missile never lands, right? Like, that's my favorite thing about the bit.
Especially
since that missile never
lands. Colorado, and then just, I guess,
right.
Somehow gets to
right.
A body of water.
Just people in the studio being like, you know what we could do, right? We could just shoot a missile because, like, who cares? It's a cartoon. Which is awesome. Whenever shows do that, I get very excited because it's cool when they take advantage of the medium in creative ways like that.
The next, I guess, comment comes from Kiri. I think Cartman in the episode is not supposed to be mainly on ripping on kids with suicidal thoughts, but rather celebrities and especially rappers who use an issue like suicide for their own brand and ego, similar to how they suggested country singers exploited 9/11 years ago. Yet Parker and Stone still acknowledge that these songs do actually help people since they aid in creating community for people with a dick and a death wish, despite it still being kind of exploitative.
Yeah, I see. I still haven't listened to the song that this is referring to, even though apparently it's the most popular thing in the world, but I don't know, Lux, you're familiar with the song. Is there an element of opportunism that present in the song, do you think?
Yes and no. The song honestly reads like pretty majorly sincere, which is, I guess, impressive, but not my thing. I think the difference between the way that they talked about country singers with 9/11 and the difference between the Logic song 1-800 numbers I don't remember is that those songs took an event that affected everyone in a lot of different, like really different ways, and rehashed it sort of over and over again. It was just and had kind of generic things to say about it. And the Logic song is actually very specific to very specific kind of experiences that people have that drive them towards suicide, stuff like that.
Well, another thing is that I don't think that there is a particular event that the song, like there wasn't some high profile suicide that the song is taking advantage of, right?
Right. It honestly, watching the video and listening to the song, which I've done a couple of times, it feels very much like the song is by a person who's had suicidal ideation and they're talking about how they didn't do it and trying to help other people not do it. But that said, I do think that Cartman as an avatar is still representing the fact that, like, whether or not this is a sincere song, Logic is making bajillions of dollars off of it.
I see this kind of stuff in Hollywood all the time, especially when people want to break out, they kind of piggyback on a social issue because, you know, if it's, you know, when you're marketing yourself, you know, you could have just made a comedy, but if you make, you know, the anorexia comedy or the, you know, blank social issue comedy, then that kind of gives you more of a marketing edge. You know, if you piggyback off a social, like a social thing that you, maybe you care about, maybe you don't, but if your goal is to get eyes on your work, then that's a powerful way to do it.
If you're making a music video for your song, at the end of the day, the goal is to get eyes on your work and sell copies of the record.
Right.
Yeah. Next email from Paul. He says, my name is Paul and I live in the Netherlands. I really like both your podcast about South Park and Rick and Morty. And of course your YouTube channel. I just want to say great work. Really impressive.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks, Paul.
I normally have a lot of thoughts about both of these shows, but I'll try to keep it down to one point. First of all, I definitely think Craig and Tweek are not gay. They just settled into a relationship because it was easier than keep trying to explain that they're not gay. But since they're both nine, it actually works as a real relationship because there's no physical element to it. I also had the thought that it gives the creators a good chance to showcase a normal, realistic relationship. This is something you pointed out in your podcast. Here's why this is the case, and this is where I think Paul makes a pretty interesting point. Have you ever noticed that Heidi is basically Wendy? To me, there's a very little difference between those two characters. They act and talk the same way. I think this reflects a more general thing in South Park, that all major female characters are all emotionally mature, rational, and compassionate, with the exception of Kyle's mom, of course, because Kyle's mom is a bitch. So Tweek and Craig in that sense are probably an opportunity for South Park to try something new. If you substitute Craig in this episode for any of the girls, it wouldn't work. You know, he's saying because they're too mature. I don't know if I agree that Wendy and Heidi are interchangeable, but I do think throughout the show, there's like a dynamic that like all the boys are, you know, boys, and people like Wendy are the more sort of mature, rational people. What do you guys think?
I think largely that's true. But then there's, you know, like the Raisins episode, and isn't Bebe a little bit less on the rational side?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a Margarine, the episode where Butters tries to infiltrate the girl's sleepover.
Right.
Margarine, rather, or whatever it's called. But I think that one interesting thing about this show is something he points out, where that the idea that there's no physical element to it, right? Like the most sort of sexually energized moment these children have, because they're children, is like they kiss occasionally, right? And like Stan throws up.
Yeah, but like kiss on the cheek and he throws up in the original, like in the first seasons.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that because there's not like a sexual component of these relationships in a meaningful way, they're usually used to compare and contrast characters, right? So Heidi's not quite the same as Wendy, I don't think. Wendy was always sort of like a crusader for a cause, and Heidi is sort of more like a supportive, like really sweet person who tags along with Cartman's bullshit because she's a supportive, sweet person. But the dynamic of Stan, who is sort of a kind of cipher with Wendy, who's very passionate, or Cartman, who's a manipulative monster, with Heidi, who's very sweet, or Tweek, who is a spaz of the highest order, with Craig, who is like about as low key as it gets. I think those relationships, more than anything else, are meant to sort of create these character juxtapositions that are really fascinating. I do think that generally, because of the nature of the boy characters, it plays out in such a way that the female characters are sort of more compassionate, more rational, but that's because of the juxtaposition with people like Cartman, who are monsters. And I think that it's hard to say on the question whether or not Tweek and Craig are gay or not, because there is no— the idea of sexual or physical attraction doesn't really come up at all in these relationships. They just sort of happen, right? Like Wendy and Stan just like ended up together because of Stan had a crush on Wendy.
Like he's the coolest guy in school and she's the most popular girl in school. I mean, you could argue that they are together for, you know, social capital just as much as Tweek and Craig, you know, whether they're gay or straight.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that. There's a whole— the relationships are used, I think, mostly almost like poetic expositions more than like actual
real relationships.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for today. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Alex just wants to give a couple shout outs to people who are kind enough to leave us a review. A reminder, if you have a couple minutes or even a couple seconds, it helps us so much. So, you know, just type in that review. Give it 5 stars, you know, make yourself feel good. And anyway, so take it away, Alec.
Yeah, thanks Chandler, who says, please do more, MDK8400. And this review from Castle Muffin, who's listening to while stores being remodeled and makes 8 hours of working so much better. So thank you so much for that, and I'm glad that we could make your shift a little more bearable.
All right, well, that's it for Respect Our Authority today. Thank you, everybody, for watching, and we'll catch you guys next week with next week's episode of South Park. Thanks a lot for watching, guys. Bye-bye.
Later.
Bye.